RCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. A federal judge holding another hearing today on deportations. The Justice Department fighting a judge's ruling that temporarily blocked deportation flights last weekend to review President Trump's use of a rare wartime act.
The U.S. District Judge is going to determine whether or not the Trump administration had the right to use the Alien Enemies Act last weekend if his order blocking those deportations should be extended. The U.S. District Judge yesterday blasted the government for providing, quote, woeful insufficient information about the deportations.
ABC Selena Wang. Demonstrations taking place outside the Education Department today in Washington, D.C. as the Trump administration details its plans to dismantle the agency. Programs including special needs and nutritional programs would be moved to Health and Human Services, President Trump says. Congress has to approve any closure. In London, some flights resuming at Heathrow Airport after today's fire nearby. The cause unknown. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
Social Security says that more than 3 million deaths are reported to the Social Security Administration each year and explains that the agency's records are highly accurate. Of these millions of death reports received each year, less than one-third of 1% are erroneously reported deaths that need to be corrected. Deaths are reported to Social Security primarily from the states, but also from other sources, including family members, funeral homes, federal agencies, and financial institutions. In a 2008 audit report, the IG noted that SSA receives most death reports from funeral homes or friends and relatives of the deceased. SSA considers such first-party death reports to be verified and immediately posts them to the Death Master file. Instances when a person is erroneously reported as deceased to Social Security can be devastating to the individual spouse and dependent children. Benefits are stopped in the short term, which can cause financial hardship until fixed and benefits restored, and the process to prove an erroneous death will always seem too long and challenging. If a person suspects that they have been incorrectly listed as deceased on their Social Security record, they should contact their local Social Security office as soon as possible. They can locate their nearest Social Security office at ssa.gov/agency/contact. They should be prepared to bring at least one piece of current original form of identification. Social Security takes immediate action to correct its records, and the agency can provide a letter that the error has been corrected that can be shared with other organizations, agencies, and employers. For additional information, visit What to Do When Someone Dies.
For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
More March Madness. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Men's college basketball, the NCAA tournament, continues tonight in Cleveland with the Marquette Golden Eagles against the New Mexico Lobos. Tip-off time at 6:25. The Badgers will play Brigham Young tomorrow night in Denver at 6:25. Wisconsin beating the Montana Grizzlies 85-66. Head coach Greg Gard able to give all of his guys some playing time, including Carter Gilmore. 8 points, 6 rebounds.
Our bench has been one of our strengths throughout the year. We've gotten great contributions off it. You saw Amos tonight. McGee's done that throughout the year. Janicki's done it at times. And then obviously Gilmore.
NBA, the Bucks rolled over the Lakers in L.A. last night, 118-89. Their road trip continues tomorrow night in Sacramento against the Kings. Women's college hockey, number one ranked Wisconsin against Minnesota tonight in the semifinals of the Frozen Four. The winner advancing to the championship Sunday at the Ritter Arena in Minneapolis. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Mostly cloudy and breezy today, with winds warming us up to mild highs in the low 50s. But as a front passes through tonight, it'll spark up some spotty showers and a few flurries. And it drops us cold. But with plenty of sunshine tomorrow, highs will still reach the mid-40s. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlau, currently 53 degrees.
At National Geographic Society, we believe in the power of wonder. It drives us to explore, pushes us to see the world differently, moves us to action, And we believe that today, wonder is more essential than ever.
Wow.
That's why we're supporting a new generation of explorers to ask big questions, make breakthroughs, and bring the future closer. Wonder awaits. Will you join us? Visit natgeo.org/wonder.
Reviewing the week's legal news with a friend of the court.
Well, I'm looking forward to Saturday morning. I haven't missed one. Outstanding, just like being in school.
It has been a week in the areas of law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. As always, I am delighted. I am honored that you have chosen to spend some of your weekend time with me in discussion.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we've got Angela Lang from Block here as our co-host for the day. Also, Representative Darren B. Madison, and This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Listening to the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Maggie's senior producer, Jamie Martinson. Maggie's off today, so we've put together some of the best moments over the last few weeks. Right now, you're going to hear from University of Wisconsin-Madison professor Dr. Yoshiko Herrera.
Welcome, everybody. Happy Friday. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've made it through another week, perhaps not without some bruising and whiplash, it seems, especially in the realm of foreign policy. We've got a great show lined up for everyone today. We're going to start out with some of the harder news this afternoon. We're going to talk about Donald Trump's approach to foreign policy, specifically Russia and Ukraine. We've got a great expert for you. At the bottom of this hour, we're going to be joined by an expert on sleep. Given that we have to spring forward this weekend, anybody ever wonder why they don't spring forward Friday at like 4 o'clock? You know, let's just lose an hour of work time as opposed to Sunday morning at 2 a.m. We'll talk about that. We've got, of course, our Ask Maggie segment. And then my colleague Terry Barr joins me at 3:30 for what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin. But let's start on the global stage. I am so excited to see my friend and yours, Professor Yoshiko Herrera, from the University of Wisconsin at Madison. She's a professor of political science, expert on Russian politics, nationalism, identity, and ethnic policies. Basically, this lady knows a whole lot about what we're about to talk about. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show, Yoshiko. It's really a pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much. Wonderful to be here.
It was quite, not just the week, which was pretty insane, but it has been quite a span of about 6 weeks. Before I start with some of the questions, I wanted to refresh everyone's recollection about some of the things that have transpired because it has been so very, very, very busy. We had about 2+ weeks ago, Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth stating that Ukraine will basically never join NATO. He followed that up shortly thereafter by saying that Ukraine needs to give up any hope of reclaiming the territory lost since Russia's full-scale invasion some many years ago now. That was then subsequently followed by Vice President J.D. Vance appearing in Munich, basically chastising the Western alliance, Western democracies that have been longtime allies of the United States. That then was followed by what can only be described as one of the most disastrous meetings of heads of state in the Oval Office, perhaps in history. Then over the weekend, so this was just this past weekend, Donald Trump announced the ceasing of all military aid to Ukraine. There seemed to be some positive movement when he did his pseudo State of the Union address on Tuesday night, announcing that there had been some outreach from President Volodymyr Zelensky, that peace talks may be moving forward. Of course, then on Wednesday, he announced that he was stopping the sharing of intelligence with Ukraine, a major setback. Yesterday, I can't believe it's every day I have to, these things are happening so quickly. Yesterday announced that he was basically revoking the asylum status of some 24,000 Ukrainians. And between all of these points in time, Russia launched one of its largest missile and drone attacks since the onset of its full-scale invasion of Ukraine, injuring some 10 people, dealing some pretty significant blows. Seemingly in response to that, overnight and then this morning, Donald Trump chastising Russia on social media, announcing that he may impose tariffs. I'm going to take a breath, Professor Herrera, because it has been quite a ride. And within the last hour, Donald Trump stating that Putin will be, quote, more generous in peace talks than, quote, difficult Ukraine. Professor Herrera, let's just start. Have I forgotten anything significant? Because there's simply been so much happening. Okay.
Let me just commend you on that list, because that was a very good summary. Just one little thing I want to note is that the asylum, the issue of Ukrainians in the United States, it's 240,000 Ukrainians who have temporary protected status. Most of those people are here living with family because they evacuate. It's very hard, obviously, to get to the U.S. from Ukraine. And so most of them are living with family. So yeah, it's 240,000.
I
but he hasn't done it yet. He said he was thinking about it.
Yes.
But then they haven't made a decision yet. So I hope that will be one of the things that turns out to be something that could have been really horrible, but didn't end up
actually end up happening.
Yeah.
I want to ask you this fundamental question that occurred to me as, again, this last wave of missile and drone attacks from Russia. Clearly, Russia emboldened by the lack of consistent approach from the Trump administration, to put it mildly, if you want to put it in more stark terms, emboldened by Trump's bear hug of Vladimir Putin, frankly, espousing talking points. Are we at a tipping point? Might Russia attempt to make even more advances, claim more territory in Ukraine, sensing a point of vulnerability, especially if intelligence sharing has indeed ceased? And secondly, this speaks, I think, more broadly to my concern over what are Russia's incentives now if you're going into peace talks? Where are the leverage points?
Yeah.
How do we move forward?
So many people thought that Russia... really since December. So December and January, Russia had extremely high losses. Some days in December and January, there were close to 2,000 casualties a day. Now that's dead, missing, and wounded, taken prisoner. Mm-hmm. But that's a lot per day. And December and January were some of the worst months in terms of casualties for Russia. Now, what were they doing? They were trying to take as much territory as they could, anticipating some kind of peace process. So for sure, they thought this is our, I mean, the sanctions have a mixed record. They inflicted some damage, inflicted a lot of long-term damage. But a lot of analysts think Russia could, you know, keep going for another couple of years. But they are facing various problems, inflation, other kinds of things. And so even though everybody wants to predict Russia is about to fall apart quickly, it keeps going. But nevertheless, they understand that in the future, they're probably going to be weaker than they are now. So they're trying to capture as much territory as they can. Ukrainians, for their part, also suffered a lot of casualties, but mostly have held on and only allowed Russia to make some incremental gains over the last, really, more than a year. The front lines haven't changed that much. So there has been a lot, even though it looks like a stalemate, there's actually been a tremendous amount of fighting going on with Russia trying to take as much territory as it can. Now, my thought from the beginning about the peace plan, about the ceasefire, about ending the war in 24 days is, okay, on the one hand, the war could end right now in 5 minutes. Russia could just say, we're done. We're pulling out. It's not a highly complex situation like Syria or Gaza, or like, whose land is it? How are we going to deal with this? Who's going to be there? It's very, very clear. Russia just gets out of Ukraine and the war ends. So, I mean, in that sense, it's not conceptually difficult. But from the beginning of the war, Russia has never moderated its demands. It has never said they want anything less than their maximalist demands of total control over Ukraine, denial of Ukrainian sovereignty, denial of Ukrainian nationhood, no foreign troops in Ukraine, no Ukraine in NATO, etc. So that is the problem. It's the problem in my view is not it's not that I want to take sides. It's just like the problem of how the war is going to end is that Russia does not want to end the war. That's my opinion. And what you're seeing with the pressure on Ukraine is it has emboldened Russia to do even more. This really terrible decision to stop sharing intelligence with Ukraine, terrible and heartbreaking, has led, you know, what does that intelligence do? It allows Ukraine to shoot down ballistic missiles from Russia. That's one of the things. It allows them to find long-range targets. And what Russia has done with that is use the opportunity to bomb relentlessly Ukraine even more in the last couple of days than they had been doing before, which was still doing a lot. So that's where the lack of pressure on Russia doesn't lead to less fighting. It leads Russia to more action. However, the sanctions, and especially if we were to put in blocking sanctions against a number of Russian banks, et cetera, if we were to block Russian oil revenue, oil and gas revenue, that could really make a big difference.
It's quite a moment that we find ourselves in with some of the leaders of Western European, again, at least putative allies of the United States, looking at actually seizing frozen Russian assets in their banks. I mean, we're at this very precarious point in time. Even yet today, President Trump saying from the Oval Office that Putin did not want to start the war in Ukraine and he wants to end this war. Is there any basis in fact or history, Professor, to support that pretty wild allegation from the current American president?
There's nothing to support the statement that Putin didn't want to start a war, but he may want to end it. I mean, in his favorable terms,
yes.
Yeah, there's a possibility he's feeling the cost, but there's also a possibility he doesn't. He hasn't said he wants to end it, other than apparently to President Trump.
I have a follow-up question that's a little bit more broad in concept. President Trump has been saying, and I think certain U.S. officials, both on the Democratic and Republican side, have been saying that Western Europe needs to do more, both in terms of payments to NATO, which have increased over the last 5 to 6 years, and that they really need to do more to ensure both their individual safety as countries, but also as a bulwark against the Soviet Union. Is there any sort of silver lining here? Is that working to any extent? We've got about a minute, and of course we can finish on the other side if we have to take a breath.
Yes, Europe, there is a sea change in understanding in Europe. I think the break in the Europe U.S. relationship, the U.S.-NATO relationship cannot be overstated. It's a huge, huge change in U.S. International relations over the last 8 years.
Folks,
so Europe understands that. Europe understands it can no longer count on the United States.
Folks, we're going to pick it right back up where we left off. What comes next as the United States adopts an increasingly isolationist posture with all of these global conflicts occurring? More with Professor Yoshiko Herrera of the University of Wisconsin-Madison when we come back right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. I'ma keep on running because the winner don't quit on themselves.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Are you ever questioning when life will slow down? Are you ever thinking of just relaxing and enjoying the simple things? All of this is possible, even while still being in the workforce. Worthington, Minnesota is a town growing, yet it's nothing like metro life. Professional and labor jobs, a beautiful lake, bike trails, recreation, acres of public hunting, festivals, and great people. Slow down. We're just a short drive away. So come join us. Worthington, it's worth a look.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Folks, we've got to talk about Derek Van Orden. The second-term congressman representing Wisconsin's 3rd District is at it again, dodging public meetings and making all kinds of unhinged comments. As many scramble and struggle to understand the chaos of what's happening in Washington, D.C., and how it's impacting people here in Wisconsin, Van Orden has been as frustrating and disrespectful as ever. In one instance, Van Orden took to social media to berate a veteran who had been fired from his job at the VA by Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency. And the veteran in question is simply someone who was just reaching out to his congressman, looking for answers. Van Orden's office has also hastily canceled public meetings, and he has made some especially wild accusations about people who have been attending these public events. Congressman Van Orden needs to stop this unhinged madness, and more importantly, be more available and accountable to his constituents.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
As a federally licensed broadcast company, this civic media station is required by FCC regulations to accept advertising by all qualified candidates for federal office. We also accept ads from state and local candidates. We do screen announcements from issue groups and PACs and exercise discretion in airing announcements with blatantly false claims or outrageous unfounded statements. These announcements do not necessarily reflect the views of civic media, its hosts, or advertisers, and the source of all issue announcements can be found online at our FCC public file.
News from the Center, WRCE.
I feel the earth move under my feet. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Yes, indeed. The earth moving under our feet. Tectonic plate shifts in U.S. foreign policy, and frankly, the way that the West and democracies respond to dictators worldwide. Today in China, President Xi Jinping, as well as his foreign minister, giving an address saying China is now the stabilizing influence in global affairs. Quite a shocking statement indicating that U.S. has now become destabilizing. Let's pick up there, Professor Herrera. Folks, if you're just joining us, we've got Professor Yoshiko Herrera, expert in Russian politics, professor at University of Wisconsin-Madison, also won the 2021 award, Chancellor's Award for Distinguished Teaching. Want to get that bit in there as well. Professor, is the U.S. now a destabilizing force in global politics? And if so, are the former conceptions that have basically prevailed since the end of World War II about who our U.S. allies, who our adversaries are, do those categories even apply anymore?
Yeah, it really pains me to say it, but I think a destabilizing force is probably an accurate statement about this administration, because beyond Ukraine, think about the tariffs, think about the relationship with Canada. I mean, who would have thought we would be claiming we're going to have Canada be the 51st state? Territorial claims on Greenland or Panama. Those are destabilizing because they're destabilizing of international norms that, first of all, protect territorial sovereignty and respect territorial sovereignty of other countries. So I think that those claims are, you know, some people think it's funny, but I don't think it's very funny, especially given that Putin has just shown that he is willing to engage in this costly war, taking territory. And so it's really not a laughing matter. And we have a situation with China and Taiwan where they have made territorial claims on Taiwan, obviously for decades. And that you know, it's really not a laughing matter. And the trade is connected to the war in the sense that, for example, one of the things that's keeping China in check is that there is trade interdependence between China and the United States. And if the U.S. were to kind of capriciously just decide like, okay, we're going to totally blow up trade relations with China and harm their economy, what is to stop them in that case from saying, okay, then we'll fully arm Russia or we'll take over Taiwan? I mean, if they think they have nothing to gain from a positive relationship, cooperative relationship with the United States, then why wouldn't, what would constrain them? So I think it's a lot of these things are very connected.
Very interrelated. I wanted to ask that very question. You know, Donald Trump's sending a letter to the Ayatollah that leads Iran, talking about trying to enter into discussions about their putative nuclear arsenal, or if they actually have workable nuclear long-range missiles. This occurred to me also as I was trying to zoom out and look at this situation from a broad geopolitical standpoint. As if the United States is pulling back, if indeed we're seeing destabilization, if countries believe that they cannot, with some reliability, predict the United States' response to certain things, and it's frankly its position of standing up to dictators, incursions and aggression that violate sovereign boundaries and the like. If Europe feels like it has to provide for its own defenses, you see an increasingly aggressive China, maybe vis-a-vis an invasion of Taiwan, etc. Are we now looking at a time period where nations may be looking not just to increase their military might, but actually looking to build their own nuclear arsenals, undoing what was decades of work to try to denuclearize the planet? Very, very scary moment. What do you think, Professor?
Yes. So one thing on the nuclear question, yes, unfortunately, a lesson that some people are drawing from the Russian invasion of Ukraine is that if Ukraine had had nuclear weapons, or if you had, if Ukraine had been in NATO under NATO's nuclear umbrella, that Russia would not have attacked it. And therefore, if you want to protect yourself from being attacked by a great power or a larger state, then you should have nuclear weapons. That's different. Definitely discussion of nuclear weapons in Europe is evolving. It would have been almost, well, it was off the table even for Finland to be part of NATO. Totally off the table for Germany to consider allowing nuclear weapons on their territory. And France is now talking about extending its nuclear umbrella. I mean, some of those things are not immediately realistic, but those discussions are happening. And but just the final thing I want to note is it's not just U.S. isolationism and pulling back. It's actually disrupting long-standing alliances between the United States and Europe and making it unclear if the U.S. would even honor our NATO commitments. That's what's I think sent shockwaves everywhere.
Can you put this into more tangible terms for regular people here at home? Oftentimes, foreign policy, these questions of geopolitics feel so far removed from people. What I am concerned about is that as we see increased global destabilization, the expenditures of if people want to view it through this lens, the amount of money that the United States, even as it pursues isolationism, that will have to be driven into our military industrial complex and potentially over time, if there are active, more active conflicts in the world, will skyrocket. How do you see that question of just U.S. expenditures and taxpayer dollars, as well as how do people at home understand the potential medium and long term impacts in their day to day lives?
Well, I think, still the prospect of an invasion of the United States is still remote, you know, because we do have these oceans, and assuming Canada and Mexico don't try to invade us, assuming we don't try to invade Canada, then the prospect of a war in the United States is remote. The prospect of war in Europe is not remote. It's virtually no experts believe that if Putin is successful in Ukraine, that he will not go further in attacking Europe. So I think, you know, do we want to have vacations in Europe? Do we want to have a lifestyle that we used to have where we had friendly relations with states and people could live in peace and prosperity? Or do we want to be everywhere around the world preparing for war? And I think that's something that people have to think about, even if it's not just right now in the U.S., an immediate threat.
Folks, that's Professor Yoshiko Herrera. We're going to have you back very soon to continue this discussion. We could spend quite a lot of time. My thanks to you. Up next, we've got Dr. Deepa Burman talking about what does it mean for your sleep schedule as we spring forward this weekend. Keep it locked, everybody. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Center, WRCE. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
A vivid new report's been released showing just how much of Wisconsin is rural. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Friday. This new report titled The Rural-Urban Balance in Wisconsin was released by the recently formed Rural Policy Institute. Bob Welch is its executive director and explains their goals.
You know, nobody's really looking into rural issues as rural issues. And you're sort of a missing think tank in Wisconsin and maybe in a wider area, quite frankly. We here at the Welch Group, who work with a lot of farm groups, together with Farm Bureau, with the Towns Association and the Rural Electric Co-ops, all sat down and said, you know, what should this look like? And we kind of came up with this idea of the Rural Policy Institute. And again, we're not going to be an advocacy group saying, hey, legislators, vote for something. But we are going to be exploring issues and letting people know what's going on in rural Wisconsin.
Bob Welch, executive director of the Rural Policy Institute. If you're interested in taking a look at the new information about how much of Wisconsin is truly rural, it's all up online. ruralpolicyinstitute.org, also on their LinkedIn account. This is going to be a part of the discussion with lawmakers next week at the annual Ag Day at the Capitol event.
Looking to grow new ideas for your farm? Then visit the WPS Farm Show. For 63 years, farmers have been coming to the show for the latest in farm equipment, services, and technology to boost their business. Don't miss this year's show, filled with ideas to help you grow. Mark your calendar for April 1st through the 3rd at the EAA grounds in Oshkosh. For more information and a full list of exhibitors, visit wisconsinpublicservice.com.
Don't let sick calves get you down and drain your profits. Get your calves up and moving with BioVet's Calf Electrolyte. Our base light product contains balanced electrolytes for restoring and maintaining proper fluid levels in scouring calves. Baselight also provides additional energy to support recovery. It's easy to mix, and calves are easy to drink it down to the last drop. Learn more about Baselight at bio-vet.com.
Innovation, that's BioVet.
And 10 education programs across the state are picking up $500 grants from the Wisconsin Ag in the Classroom program. Beth Schaefer, the executive director, says it's part of their Ag in All Classrooms effort. One example of a project funded includes the Menominee Indian High School in Kashina getting a $500 grant for an indigenous medicine garden. You can see more details on the projects that are funded on our website, MidwestFarmReport.com. I'm PM Yonke.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Mostly cloudy and breezy today, with winds warming us up to mild highs in the low 50s. But as a front passes through tonight, it'll spark up some spotty showers and a few flurries. And it drops us cold. But with plenty of sunshine tomorrow, highs will still reach the mid-40s. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlau, currently 53 degrees.
The Todd Alba Show.
Let's go to Ollie in the North Woods. Ollie, hiccups or gas, what's worse?
Well, I'd like to frame my answer in the form of a sport. It depends upon whether you're a passer or a receiver.
That's great. Whether you're the passer or the receiver, that's the best line of the day.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Nothing you could say could tear me away from my dog. My dog is shallow, y'all. Hi, I'm Smokey Robinson. When you adopt a shelter pet, you not only bring joy and love into your home, you also give another animal the chance to experience that special bond. Join me in supporting American Humane Society and their incredible work to help our most vulnerable friends. Together, we can make a real difference. Donate today at AmericanHumane.org.
Pete Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome This Week in Waukesha host Don Brown and Milwaukee native and writer-director of Just a Bit Outside, Sean Hanisch. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Maggie's senior producer, Jamie Martinson. Maggie's off today, but we've put together some of the best moments over the last few weeks. Right now, you'll hear from Maggie along with her co-host, Tom Pasiewicz, and Ben Wickler, the chairperson of the Wisconsin Democrats.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's Thursday, so I've got congressional candidate Tom Pasiewicz with me, small business owner, Navy vet, and we are happy to be joined by chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, Ben Wickler. Welcome back to The Maggie Dawn Show, Ben. Let's just jump in. We have a billionaire overlord that wants to pick this state's next Supreme Court justice, and I've been talking to a lot of my friends about this. Most importantly, some of my conservative friends as well. And I'd like you to address the thing that I hear in response all of the time when I say, why should we let a billionaire overlord just handpick our next Supreme Court justice, especially one that has a case that's pending in Wisconsin courts that's likely to make its way up to the Supreme Court? And they all say, but George Soros, can you please respond to this whataboutism and this, I'm going to say, false equivalency that's offered as a defense of Musk's over $11 million spend in this Supreme Court election?
So there's one person who's operating as the de facto president of the United States, who is slashing Social Security, gutting cancer research, gutting the Veterans Administration, and posting on the massive social media platform that he bought that judges should be impeached if they get in the way, while he undermines and shreds the United States Constitution. That person is poured $10 million into Brad Schimmel's campaign. There is no one else who is destroying the country with this kind of velocity and viciousness, with the possible exception of Donald Trump himself, who is not endorsed in the race. His hatchet man, his bag man, Elon Musk, is the one who is pouring himself into winning this. So that is different from every other person who's contributing on either side. Now, it's also the case that Elon Musk has put in, as far as we can tell, at least five times as much as any other donor on either side. The second biggest donor in this election is Dick and Liz Uline.
Yes.
Call them one donor or two donors. They put in far more than George Soros. They're the founders of Stop the Steal. But you know what? As much as I think their politics are terrible and they're bad for the country, they're not running the United States government right now and threatening to dismember the judiciary alongside programs that working families across our state need. So if you want to do a what about, you could say, well, you got the Ulines, the forces of darkness who funded Stop the Steal and tried to overturn the presidential election on one side. And you have George Soros, who, you know, supports free and fair elections in the United States and around the world on the other side. But there's something in a completely different category, which is Elon Musk.
Yes.
Elon Musk is threatening the very foundations of the American experiment at the same time as he's attacking the fundamental function of the United States government to support, you know, regular folks, non-billionaires all over the country. And by the way, Elon Musk also, unlike every other major donor in the race that I know of, has a case that serves his own bottom line that will probably reach the Wisconsin Supreme Court. So he's personally invested in making himself money while ripping away money that everyone else in this country relies on for things like predicting the weather so you can grow your crops. That is why there's nothing like what Musk is doing, and there never has been in a Wisconsin Supreme Court election.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yep.
So people know the scale here. My first response is always, I think money in politics is terrible, and I support a constitutional amendment to get it out of our politics because it's corrupting. Okay, so let's agree on that. Now let's talk about the scale of the corrupting influence, because there's simply no comparison in this race. I went to a bunch of independent sources today to try to get sort of like the tally of where the spends stand today. Elon Musk is at 11 million. America PAC at over 6.18 million. Building America's Future, over 3.96 million. That totals together over 11 million. We haven't gotten to the Elines yet, who, by the way, brought workers from Mexico to work in their U.S.-based manufacturing plants, but paid them Mexican wages in violation of U.S. labor laws and then shipped them back. So, yeah, lots to talk about there. That's 11 million. The Soros money that I could even track, because he's given up control of a lot of the PACs that he started a decade ago because the guy's aging very quickly, it's like maybe 2 mil that I could find. It's not even clear. So like the scale is just not comparable. Then you layer on what is the objective and who holds the reins of power, who is actually calling the shots in our government today. They're not comparable. Tom, I know you've got a couple of questions.
One is Trump bought a Tesla and Musk gave him $100 million. I mean, what is he expecting to get out of Wisconsin if for whatever reason he wins, which I don't think he will. But Ben, at some point, it's good to remind people that Schimmel lost a statewide election not too long ago. And it seems like people have forgotten that. You know, we had Judge Crawford on a couple of weeks ago, and it seemed like she had to bring up the same stuff that Josh Call had to bring up in order to overcome Schimmel and put a Democrat in that attorney general seat. But what do you say to people who like don't remember who Brad Schimmel is?
So Brad Schimmel was the attorney general under Scott Walker, who led the attacks on abortion and reproductive freedom. There's a case called Planned Parenthood versus Brad Schimmel. He said he was honored to have his name in the case. And by the way, the lawyer for Planned Parenthood in that race, Susan Crawford, the candidate that we're supporting in this race. Brad Schimmel defended Scott Walker's corruption. He defended the gerrymandered maps. He defended the voter suppression. He actually lost a case that Susan Crawford led that tried to prevent people from being able to access a free voter ID, which you'd think if what you're interested in is election security, getting people IDs so they could vote would make a lot of sense. He was on the other side of that. He famously sat on 6,000 untested sexual assault kits.
Yes.
Didn't lift a finger to get resources from the state legislature. He told Jill Karofsky, who was the head of the Crime Victims Department in the Department of Justice at that time, that if she wanted to test those rape kits, she'd have to go raise the money for it. She'd have to go write grants and get someone else to fund it, because he wasn't going to go over and ask the legislature. He only started testing those rape kits once he took political heat from it.
Yes.
He's somebody like he's mega, mega, mega. His team led the charge that they designed the legal strategy that ended Roe versus Wade. And meanwhile, he's a guy who sued to kill the Affordable Care Act and has this relentless record of he said he was suing Obama every second, that he was just using his office for partisan attacks. Yes. And that's what he's done at every phase of his career. And now he said that he's crawling around on knee pads, begging donors to get involved in his race because his donor base sees this as a chance to take back the court,
right?
Which also says something about how they used to see the court. This is somebody who is begging for Donald Trump to endorse him and says that Trump needs a support network in the courts. The only way that he can get wins is if the attacks on Trump stop in the courts. So he's basically signaling that he'll do whatever Trump wants. And he said that Trump was screwed over in 2020 by the courts. Well, in 2020, our Supreme Court didn't overturn the presidential election. And he's asked whether he thinks that was the right decision. And he said he doesn't know.
Yes.
If you want a case study in mega extremism and attacks on healthcare and reproductive freedom, in doing the bidding of right-wing billionaires, Donald Trump himself, in turning what should be a nonpartisan office into a political weapon at the hands of far-right extremists, Brad Schimmel is your guy. If you want anything else, it's Susan Crawford.
I'll just add this. As a lawyer, I can vehemently disagree with certain lawyers' positions. And I can have begrudging respect if they are showing fidelity to the rule of law, are skilled lawyers and or jurists, judges. I'm also going to layer this one on top of all this. Brad Schimmel is a dummy. This is not a smart man. When things are extraordinarily plain under state statute, he still gets them wrong, which is why ask lawyers. If you're a conservative, ask lawyers quietly off the record. Ask judges that sit on the same county circuit court as Judge Schimmel does today in Waukesha County. Ask them quietly off the record what they think of Brad Schimmel as a legal mind. The reason that he's lost so many of these cases and that he's salivating at the opportunity to be on the Wisconsin Supreme Court is that not only can he do the political building, he's the last word on things. So he doesn't even have to be a good lawyer or judge anymore. He can just make crud up. And here is the case that I think makes that so abundantly clear. He has been reversed on appeal by the most conservative or one of the most conservative appeals courts in the state in his completely bogus interpretation of the one toothiest law in the state of Wisconsin that ensures that every single person in this state, every regular person, can hold their government accountable. And that is our sunshine laws and our open meetings laws.
Yes.
He couldn't even read the English words in the statute correctly. The guy is a dummy. And when you got a dummy who's also a partisan hack, that is the most dangerous combination, who's willing to literally say on the record, please, please, please give me money. Oh, Elon Musk, yes, I'll be happy to support your and Mr. Trump's agenda. It's an abomination.
Absolutely. Yep.
When we step back from all of this, Ben, and, you know, every election cycle we hear, it's so important. It's so important. It's more important than the next. I was speaking to a group of folks yesterday at MATC, Get Out the Vote and voter awareness event. And I made that argument again, that this is an incredibly consequential election. And that if we'd like to return and maintain Wisconsin as a reasonable place where we can have these reasonable disagreements and we don't have naked partisanship in our courts, this is the time for voters and conservatives as well, Democrats as well, everybody to stand up and say, we want functional government, including the Supreme Court and the state. What do you say to people who are fatigued, Ben, who are so tired and would rather just check out?
Well, I mean, first, I get it. How could any of us not be exhausted at this point? But secondly, Elon Musk is relying on people being too tired to resist. He posts about how he works through the weekend. And it's like, he said, it's like getting a head start on the other team. He's working through the weekend to destroy Social Security, to destroy Medicaid and Medicare, to undermine the Department of Education, things that people rely on to make sure that their water is safe. Like, this is exactly his strategy, is to exhaust us and overwhelm us. And in the next 19 days, we alone in the country, in Wisconsin, we have the chance to defeat Elon Musk and Brad Schimmel, his right hand, and demonstrate that our side can actually fight and win despite the millions of dollars that they can pump in. And when we do that, it has not only a huge long-term effect on Wisconsin to prevent the re-gerrymandering of our state, to ensure our state Supreme Court actually believes in our Constitution, the rule of law, freedom, justice, democracy, but it also shows the whole country that supporting Elon Musk as he wreaks havoc on working families across our state and our country, that siding with Elon Musk might be politically bad for your health. Republicans in Congress right now are just rolling over. They're allowing their constituents to be ripped off and hurt and attacked because they're afraid of crossing Elon Musk and because they think that Musk can defend them from an enraged citizenry. But the reality is, as we're going to show on April 1st, that the public has the final say. And I think that's a message the country needs to hear. They need to see that whatever Musk spends in a race like this, it's not enough to buy off the voters themselves who get to decide who holds power in this country. And when we fight back and when we win, we can re-energize those who share our values, who believe this country should work for everyone, not just for a handful of far-right billionaires, and show Republicans that they should run screaming from Musk's side and divorce themselves from this shotgun marriage that he's arranged, if they want to hold on to their jobs in 2026.
Yeah, exactly. And Ben, this is another spring election, yet it's still incredibly important. What's the message to get people to make sure they go out and vote? What is the party doing? What is everybody doing on the ground to make sure people realize they have to vote in this one?
So the first message for Democrats is exactly what I've been saying, that this is Trump and Musk's right hand, who wants to use the courts as a partisan weapon to eliminate any accountability and to support them as they shred Social Security, attack unions, undermine working families across the state. The second thing is, if you want an abortion ban, vote for abortion ban Brad. And if you think we should have reproductive freedom that is based in our Constitution, support Susan Crawford in this election. And the third is, bring friends to the polls.
Bring friends. That's the key, right? Bring everybody you know. Bring everybody you can.
Folks, that is Ben Wickler, chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party. Thanks so much, Ben. We're going to continue this discussion on the other side with each and every one of you, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. My name's Maggie Dawn. Brad Schimmel, the shameless shill for Elon Musk and our billionaire overlord. I don't think he should be picking who's on our Supreme Court. And he's a dummy. My thoughts. More when we return right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
If you're living with dry age-related macular degeneration or dry AMD, you may be at risk for developing geographic atrophy or GA. GA can be unpredictable and progress rapidly, leading to irreversible vision loss. Now there's something you can do to
slow it down and get it going slower.
Izervay is proven to slow GA progression.
Izervay. Izervay
or Avastin Captid Pagel is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Izervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Izervay may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about Izervay today.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Visit Izervay.com. That's Izervay.com.
Did you know there's a city in Wisconsin that goes all in on the idea of celebrating St. Patrick's Day for more than a week? Members of the Shamrock Club of New London, about an hour west of Green Bay, lead the festivities, which brings thousands of visitors to the area. But do you know what has officially kicked it all off for more than 40 years? Here's club member Ryan Lanning with the answer.
The Monday of our St. Patrick's week is we always have Leprechaun Day, and the leprechauns are responsible for changing the population signs symbolically from New London to New Dublin, and then they visit various schools and nursing homes. And we bring smiles more than anything, and we like to enlighten our community. That's part of what we're about. And truthfully, I think everybody looks forward to seeing the green suits and all the mischief and shenanigans we like to pull. It's just a great time for everybody.
Even the city council votes to make New Dublin the official name for New London this time of year. That is one slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Jamie Martinson, Maggie's senior producer. Maggie's off today, but we've put together some of the best moments over the last few weeks. Right now, hear from Maggie along with her co-host, Tom Palsiewicz.
Welcome back, everybody. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got Tom Palsiewicz with me this afternoon as my guest co-host, and our biggest thanks to Ben Wickler, chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, for being here with each and every one of you and us to talk about the Wisconsin Supreme Court race. We'd like to take your calls, get some of your thoughts on where that race stands. I'd also like to address some of the allegations, some of the claims that are being made by both of the candidates. What did you think of the debate last night? Did it change your mind about anything? Was it what you expected? 855-752-4842. I'm going to double down on this. Not only do I think Brad Schimmel is a terrible, bad lawyer and that he's kind of a dummy as a lawyer, I'm going to make this statement. If Brad Schimmel had to actually take a bar exam, he wouldn't pass it. He would not pass it. Brad Schimmel is admitted to the bar of the state of Wisconsin because he had diploma privilege. It means you don't have to sit for the bar exam. Now, I didn't either. I was admitted to the Wisconsin bar because I attended Wisconsin Law School, completed my core requirements, passed the ethics exam. However, I'm also barred in six other states and have taken two other bar exams and passed one with basically 24 hours worth of studying when I was in the midst of like massive litigation.
So Maggie, just a quick question for you. Is the ethics exam a requirement?
It is. Okay. For almost every single state's bar, including Wisconsin's.
Is there a polygraph test that goes along with that ethics exam?
There should be. There should be, Tom. 855-752-4842.
I wanted to ask Ben this question, but I'll ask you instead, Maggie, because, you know, the Republicans seem to have run a slew of, I would say, not top-notch candidates for the state Supreme Court. I don't understand the dynamics. Is it
detestable Dan Kelly? Yeah. Schimmel the shameless shill. I mean,
I don't understand, like, what are they, I know why they want that person in there, but how do they expect that person to win votes if they can't seem credible and they can't actually articulate their positions?
I find it disturbing. And again, if you're a conservative, I ask you, just read through the histories of Brad Schimmel and yes. Susan Crawford.
Right.
Listen to what they have said. One of them, you can disagree with her personal political beliefs.
Right.
One of them actually sounds like a Supreme Court justice who is actually at least trying to give people the assurance that she will be independent and objective and not execute simply on her personal political beliefs.
And it's a nonpartisan race. There is no D or R associated with the candidates.
But Schimmel's out there saying Donald Trump needs a support network and right. I'll be that on the Supreme Court. That's yes. not That's what a not. Justice is made of.
Right.
We got a new caller, Stephen from Cudahy. Say hi to Tom. What's your comment or question this afternoon?
Hello, Maggie Dunn. It's your favorite Milwaukee County supervisor, Stephen Shea.
Stephen.
Hi, Mr. Shea. How are you?
I'm okay. And yourself?
I'm doing well. Nice to hear from you, sir. What's your question or comment? Thank you for calling.
Well, sure. I've been out doing doors for this race every weekend. And the scary part is it doesn't seem to be on a lot of people's radar so far, yes. even with the super intensive commercials. And, you know, that one ad that the Republicans are running, catch and release Crawford, they're trying to do exactly to Crawford what they did to Mandela Barnes, you right. know. Soft on crime, you know. So, but I agree completely with your analysis of the debate. I thought Crawford cleaned his clock, but, you know, whether or not other people are going to agree with me, I can't say for sure.
And whether or not enough people watched it is going to be
right.
the key. Yep.
Thank you, Supervisor Shea. Let's just take up a few of these, the allegations that have been made against Susan Crawford and Brad Schimmel. First of all, Susan Crawford has never, ever advocated for stopping deportations. She has never said that I'm going to protect sanctuary cities. She's never taken any position on that. Did she sentence a child sex offender to 4 years in prison and 6 years supervised release after a prosecutor asked for 10 years? Yeah, she sure did. Brad Schimmel has made all kinds of sentencing decisions. And in fact, this is kind of weird. He offered a plea deal to a man charged with child porn in the year before he won the attorney general's race. Okay. And interestingly enough, the guy who he just, you know, little plea deal, no sentence. Here is what actually happened. The guy's lawyer donated, basically maxed out donations to Schimmel's AG campaign. Coincidence, perhaps, but again, child porn, plea deal, and just to be clear, in exchange for the man pleading guilty to the charge, Schimmel agreed not to file more charges and recommended the mandatory minimum 3-year prison sentence. This is when he was Waukesha County's DA. So, yeah, we're going to discuss more. We're going to return to the Elon Musk of it all with Tom Paulsiewicz and each and every one of you. Join our conversation, 855-752-4842. When we come back after these messages, you're going to hear news, weather, and sports, and then more from Tom and I and each one of you right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
This is News from the Center, WRCE. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time as we will take a look at our NCAA basketball brackets after weekend number one. Also, the news of the weekend. Get you caught up. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
The Todd Alba Show.
L.A. Tom, L.A., what do you got for us?
We do have a woman problem in this country. There is an issue there that needs to be solved if we are ever to have a female president.
Look at Mexico has a president. You know, Margaret Thatcher. I mean, it's just all over the world. I mean,
you have to remember Margaret Thatcher. They had queens.
We have Lindsey Graham. Come on.
Wow, that's true.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. President Trump and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth say Elon Musk was not at the Pentagon to receive a meeting on U.S. war plans in China. Hegseth says Musk was there to discuss military cuts.
There was no war plans. There was no Chinese war plans. There was no secret plans. That's not what we were doing at the Pentagon.
Two U.S. officials confirmed that ABC News reporting last night that Musk was slated to visit the Pentagon and attend an unclassified meeting at the Joint Chiefs of Staff that would touch on China and other topics. A judge holding a hearing today on the deportation flights that transported alleged gang members last weekend. The judge halting those flights, now reviewing whether President Trump's use of the Alien Enemies Act is legal. Pope Francis remains in stable condition, the Vatican says, now hospitalized for 36 days, recovering from pneumonia. Today, a trumpet player delivering an impromptu performance of Ave Maria outside the Pope's hospital window. This is ABC News.
You can